Well, we've always heard about the evangelical church standing with Israel and how evangelical Christians are Israel's best friends. Is that changing?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
As I speak with you this week from the United States, a conference is taking place in Bethlehem as the birthplace of Jesus, called Christ at the Checkpoint, which, among many noble goals it may have, will also paint Israel in the worst possible light in terms of, quote, the occupation, and words like apartheid and ethnic cleansing might even be used in the midst of the conference. And yet it is a, quote, Christian conference. What are we to make of it? And what about evangelical support for Israel? Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. My guest is David Brog. He is the executive director of Christians United for Israel, CUFI, which you've probably heard of in association with the name of Pastor John Hagee. Before serving in this position, he worked in the United States Senate for 7 years, rising to be chief of staff to Senator Arlen Specter and staff director of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's also served as an executive of America Online, practiced corporate law in Tel Aviv, Israel, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Brog is the author of Standing with Israel, Why Christians Support the Jewish State, and In Defense of Faith, the Judeo-Christian Idea and the Struggle for Humanity. And check this out, 2007, the Forward newspaper listed Brog in its Forward 50 Most Influential Jews in America. He's a graduate of Princeton University and Harvard Law School. Hey, David, that's a pretty impressive bio. Congratulations, man.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. Just goes to show you it's possible to go to some good schools and not be entirely misdirected.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that can actually happen, amazingly yeah. So. And we can talk about that a bit later, campuses and where they stand on Israel. But, David, I think this is a great opportunity for you and I to model something. We are Jews with different religious beliefs, different beliefs about Jesus. Your organization that you work with Pastor Hagee, does things day and night that are absolutely dear to my heart. But I'm also reaching out to Jewish people to tell them about Jesus and working closely with Jewish believers in the land, and Pastor Hagee working with Christians more on an international level, etc. So we could say we have all these differences, or we could say there are core life and death issues that unite us and that we must stand for. And this is what we have to do in calling Christians together to stand for Israel. So just to introduce things, David, what is the mission and purpose of CUFI, and how do you, as a Jewish man, fit in the midst of all these Christians?
Well, thanks, Michael. And you know what I love about what I do, and what I appreciate so much about you and your having me on today, is that we can focus on what we share. Just like you said, there are theological differences between Jews and Christians. Primarily, we disagree about the identity of the Messiah. God knows we have obsessed and stressed that difference far too deeply for far too long. We can also focus on what we share, and we can also join hands on those issues where we agree. Christians United for Israel is very much a policy education-oriented ministry. It is not a ministry that seeks to share the gospel. It is a ministry that seeks to educate Christians about Israel and the imperatives of standing with Israel, and then to activate Christians to speak out on behalf of Israel in our churches, communities, and before the Congress. For this unique mission, our board, including Pastor Hagee, decided that it was fine and proper to have a Jewish man like me, both genetically and theologically Jewish, involved. My career was on Capitol Hill. Prior to that, I lived in Israel. And I wrote my book, really stressing Christian theology. And so this is one area where we agree and can work together.
All right. Tell you what, we'll keep working on you on the Jesus end, David. Don't worry about that. But we come back, I want to get to a very important article you wrote in the Middle East Quarterly, The End of Evangelical Support for Israel.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. My guest, David Brog, Executive Director of CUFI, Christians United for Israel. David, you recently wrote an article for the Middle East Quarterly, The End of Evangelical Support for Israel. I found it to be a tremendous article, well-informed, clearly presented, but also ending with hope in terms of where Christians are standing. But is there an erosion of evangelical support for Israel? And are Christian leaders and Christian young people believing the narrative of the evil Israeli occupiers and, based on that, lessening their support for Israel?
Yes, Michael. Yes to the erosion. Yes to the gullibility of a young generation being fed a black and white anti-Israel narrative and believing it. The good news is, though, as you note, we are seeing the trend early enough that we can make a difference. And you know, some folks were disappointed. I wrote the article. They said, "Hey, everyone believes all evangelicals support Israel. Don't go sharing the dirty secret that some evangelicals are critics of Israel. It might diminish the aura of our power in Washington or beyond." I don't think that's how you solve problems. I think the opposite. You solve a problem by making people aware of a problem, and when done best, you do it early so you can solve the problem. You know, we lost the mainline Protestant denominations. Today, the extent to which the Presbyterians or the Methodists or the Anglicans act in connection to Israel, it's to divest from Israel, not to support Israel. And it's from Israel, not Iran, that they seek to divest. If we don't want a repeat of that tragedy, we have to sound the alarm now while the phenomenon is clear and worrisome, but while there's still plenty of time to fight back.
Okay, why is it then that so many evangelicals had just kind of a gut-level connection to Israel, believe that the Jewish people back in the land was fulfillment of prophecy, and many in the younger generation of evangelical Christians are not getting it? Was it merely that these older Christians had this prophetic idea that Jews are going to be regathered and Jesus is going to come and this is the sign, and now it's not panning out like that, and therefore there's disappointment or disillusionment? Or is it just believing one part of a narrative now? And you know, what's causing the shifts, in your opinion?
Well, this is a fascinating generation we're talking about. I'm talking about the millennial generation. They tend to be people who are now between the ages of 20 and 30, even 35 could be considered millennials, college age, grad school age, early years of careers. And they're a very interesting generation, and we see this both in the evangelical community, also to some extent in the Jewish community. They're independent. They ask tough questions, and this independent streak in the evangelical world has boiled down to something that I think could be healthy. They're not accepting the political positions of their parents. They're saying that being a follower of Jesus does not mean being a right-wing Republican. And frankly, I think that kind of questioning, that kind of political reexamination could be a healthy thing. The problem is it also opens them up to those willing to exploit their openness. So we see a generation that they call themselves, they say they're less biblically literal than their parents. Mm-hmm. Just because the Bible says something, they're not going to take it literally. They're also going to take their values, which they believe come from the Bible, and the example of Jesus, which comes from the Bible, and they're going to use the example and the ideas and test the biblical literal lines against the larger principles. And so you see an older generation, Pastor Hagee, for example, was very literal. It says, "He who blesses Israel will be blessed, and he who curses Israel will be cursed." Well, he wanted to bless Israel. And it speaks about the return of the Jews from the four corners of the earth to their land. And when that played out in his lifetime, he saw that as an act of God. There was no dissuading him from that this was God's will. The younger generation is going to say, okay, it says he who blesses Israel should be blessed, but hold on a minute, wait a second, what does it mean to bless Israel? If Israel is acting poorly, do I necessarily have to support them? and they want to examine the facts on the ground and then determine for themselves which side is just, which side is not, and what Jesus would have done. And they know that Jesus had a great compassion for the oppressed and the downtrodden. They want to figure out for themselves who's oppressing whom. All of these things could be fair, could be good. The problem is it creates an opening. It creates a wedge through which a lot of people with a lot of money are coming and teaching lies about Israel. They're saying Israel's the oppressor, the Palestinians are the oppressed, and it's the story's being told in a superficial way that can convince a lot of people who don't know better.
Right.
What we on our side have to do is teach a lot of history, and
exactly.
In these days it takes time.
Exactly. And what I find with the younger generation, there is a siding with the perceived victim, the one that's being bullied. So, for example, you'll have younger people overwhelmingly saying that they favor redefining marriage and two men or two women should be able to marry.
Yeah.
And a lot of what fuels that is that there was a real nice gay kid in their class that was bullied. And
exactly.
So they will have, on the one hand, a good heart for the oppressed and for the victim without filtering it through larger moral questions and the implications of redefining marriage. So the same way, if you just come into the narrative and you see this wall and it's affecting tourism and it's affecting our livelihood and it's divided our family one from the other, and you got the Israelis with the machine guns standing there, well, that you know who the victim is. When you look at the larger story and realize that a security fence with some parts, tiny parts being a wall, 3 or 4%, that a security fence was put up to keep murderers out and to keep snipers from killing men, women, and children, the narrative changes. But a lot of young people are not getting the larger picture. Now you mentioned
right.
people with a lot of money. George Soros has become very well known as a billionaire who has funded some of the most radical left-wing political groups in America. Is he tied in any way to the Israel issue?
Yeah, he absolutely is. There is a group called the Telos Group, T-E-L-O-S, and they take what they claim to be 15 groups of young evangelical influencers, you know, millennial generation Christian leaders, to what they call Israel and Palestine every year. Now, I've seen their itineraries. I know, and I've heard the feedback of folks coming back from the trip. And it's a very smart trip, right? They bring young leaders over there, and the young leaders meet with Arabs and Israelis. They meet with Christians, Muslims, and Jews. But all of them share the same perspective on the conflict, which is it's all Israel's fault. So the Palestinian Muslims and Christians they meet with are going to blame it all on Israel. And then they'll meet with some Israeli Jews who are part of the Peace Now movement. Israel is a democracy. You have Israeli Jews who are highly critical of the country. And the Israeli Jews are more or less going to share the narrative. It's all Israel's fault. But the level of dishonesty gets troubling. Some of the money involved in this has been used to make films that are critical of Israel, like a film called With God on Our Side, or one
mm-hmm.
called Christ at the Checkpoint. And like you mentioned, they'll talk about this wall, which is mostly offense. They'll talk about Israel's apartheid wall, without ever once mentioning the Intifada. Without ever once mentioning the wave of suicide bombings that blew up Jewish buses, cafes, and restaurants, killing over 1,000 Israelis, Jews and Arabs, by the way, that forced Israel to try to build a fence between it and those attacking it. That's simply a lie. You can't discuss the wall without discussing the terrorism that caused Israelis to decide to build the wall, just like you couldn't discuss our barrier fence with parts of Mexico without discussing the problem of illegal immigration that caused us to build it. But in the absence of that context, the students coming on these trips are left to think Israel simply did it because they woke up one morning and wanted to make life difficult for the Palestinians. And they didn't want any Arabs in their midst. As you know, the wall separates Israelis, Arabs and Jews, Muslims, Christians and Jews, from West Bank Palestinians who want their own state, who are not citizens of the state of Israel. It does not separate Jews from Arabs.
All right. What about a statement like this? Jesus was a Palestinian who would be suffering under Israeli occupation today. We've got about a minute. Give me your response to that. What troubles you about that?
What troubles me about that is it's an ongoing effort to de-Judaize Jesus and to instead make him a prop in Palestinian propaganda. So we're getting again into the neighborhood. Again, there, you know, when I there's fair criticism of Israel. There's fair debate about what should be done to achieve peace. What's unfair is lying about the conflict, blaming it on one side. So when you de-Judaize Jesus, when you turn him into a Palestinian and claim that the Israeli occupation is somehow akin to the Roman occupation, you're taking a complex conflict where Israelis have made tough choices to defend themselves from terror, and you're turning it into some evil force versus a purely good force. It's lying about the conflict, unfortunately, and not knowing better. A lot of our young people are believing it.
Got it. All right, we'll be right back with David Brog, Executive Director of Christians United for Israel, CUFI. Very important to separate fact from fiction when it comes to Israel and the Palestinians.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
They are the descendants of those early followers of Christ, yet few are even aware of their existence.
It's very important that all the Christian locations do not just become archaeological sites or museums. The living aspect of Christianity in Palestine is disappearing.
All right, that is from the movie The Stones Cry Out, which points to the plight of Palestinian Christians and basically places the blame for their suffering at the feet of the people of Israel. My guest, David Brog, Executive Director of Christians United for Israel. David, you lived in Israel. You've practiced law in that context. You've worked in the Senate. You're now working with Christian leaders around the world, with Israeli leaders right up to Prime Minister Netanyahu. Can you honestly say that Israel is guiltless, blameless in its dealing with the Palestinians? Or are there things that we should acknowledge that are wrong to help in the pursuit of justice? Or is it that the charges are so blown out of proportion and the role of radical Islam ignored that it's almost hard to admit wrong without playing into the larger anti-Israel narrative?
Well, I think you're right. It is hard to admit wrong without playing into the narrative, but I also think it's important to admit it. Israel is a government of men, and like any government of men, is fallible and has made mistakes. And I think we can review Israeli history and point to junctures where they've made mistakes. We can view Israeli military operations and point out their mistakes. You know, when Israel went into Gaza to stop missile fire, it fired on a home that intelligence told them was a storage place for Hamas missiles. It ended up being bad intelligence, and they harmed innocent civilians. They killed innocent civilians. So again, we can point to mistakes in the small picture and the big picture. The problem, though, as you point out, is that's exactly what Israel's enemies want us to do. They want us to focus on Israel's mistake and miss the big picture. The analogy I would make, Michael, is that when it comes to America's conflict with al-Qaeda, when it comes to our battle with the Taliban, we too have made mistakes. We too have killed innocents by accident. And yet, when it comes down to it, my faith doesn't call on me to be neutral in the battle between the U.S. and al-Qaeda. My faith calls on me to take sides, to take the side of justice. And the side of justice in this example is the side that is trying to punish and harm the wicked while sparing the innocent. We may make mistakes, but our effort is not to harm innocents. When innocents are harmed, we don't celebrate and hand out sweets. We mourn. I see Israel very much the same way. Israel is struggling to survive against enemies determined to destroy it. It has made mistakes in the effort to survive. But when these mistakes happen, they're not celebrated, they're mourned. When you look at Hezbollah, you look at Hamas, you look at al-Qaeda, it's very different. Their goal is to harm the innocent. Their goal is to kill the innocent, and when they succeed in doing so, they celebrate. A lot of people look at what they see as the occupation, Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, and again, that's without knowing history, they just say, boy, why is Israel occupying Palestinian land? Again, just like with the fence wasn't built to harm Palestinians. It was built to protect Israelis, Jewish and Arab, Christian, Jewish and Muslim, from terrorism. When you look at the history of Israel's conflict with the Palestinians, you see over and over again proposals have been made to divide the land. People say, hey, there are two people claiming the same piece of land, split it. Jews get part, Arabs get part. Over and over again, five times if not more, the Israelis have said, okay, we'll do it. We'd like it all, but we're willing to compromise and take half a loaf. Over and over again, the Palestinian leadership, and I blame the leadership more than the people, mm-hmm. Have said, no, we won't split it. We will not accept a Jewish state in any size, shape, or form. We say no, and not only do we say no, often the no comes in the form of missiles and bombs. Therefore, if you see the occupation, some see it and say, hey, that's Judea and Samaria. It's the biblical heartland. It's a strategic heartland. Israel has every right to be there. Others say, no, Israel shouldn't be there. But even if you're of the school that says, no, Israel shouldn't be there, it's very hard for me to blame Israel for its ongoing presence there because Israel has offered time after time to leave. But like any other country,
what about the settlements? You know, I'm on your side on these things, yeah. But I want to raise these things. Palestinian Authority has made clear that if there's to be a Palestinian state, it would be, to use the German word, Judenrein, free of any Jews. And yet, there are more settlements. Those are often said this is the number one obstacle to peace, and it's hurting Palestinians, and it's taking their land away from them. So we can get started on this and then come back after the break. But just in short, what's the truth about the settlement from your perspective?
Well, two things. First of all, like you say, 20% of Israel's population is Arab. So anyone who thinks this is a purely, blood-based society where only Jews are allowed, they're mistaken. Israel's 20% Arab. Jews want to live in the biblical heartland of Judea and Samaria. When you read your Bible, everything that takes place there takes place in the hill country, Judea, Samaria, not in the coast where most of Israelis live today. Jews say, of all places on earth, why should these areas be Judenrein? Why should these areas be banned, as far as Jews living there? And they want to live there. And that, to me, is an understandable desire. Is it a barrier to peace? It's discussed that way. And the way the settlements are discussed, you would think they take up maybe, 20, 30, 40% of the land of the West Bank that the Palestinians want for a state. It's not true. It's more like 3 or 4% of the land. Every leader on both sides understands that there are certain blocks of settlements Israel would keep in a peace deal. And every leader on each side understands that if there were a peace deal, Israel would cede actual territory from Israel in compensation for the land of the settlement blocks that were kept. God. This isn't a barrier to peace. It's just a distraction. This 2 or 3 or 4% isn't the core. The core, when you look over the history, the reason that the conflict persists is the Arab refusal to accept a Jewish state in any
right, and going back to the partition plan in 47.
Earlier.
Yeah, and of course, that being the key one where you could have had two-state solution that was put on the table. We'll be right back with a lot more with David Brog. I want to ask him, what do we make of images of Israelis bulldozing houses and Palestinian Christians saying, look, we're Christians, we love Jesus, we love justice, but we're being mistreated and evangelicals are fueling the fire of that mistreatment. More with David Brog on the other side of the break. Let me strongly encourage you to get a special package we put together. I did a DVD lecture on Is Israel an Evil Occupier? I was reviewing some of it last night at University of South Florida. It lays things out crystal clear with PowerPoint, with illustrations, and with Q&A from some of the Palestinians and Muslims that were in the audience. The DVD, together with my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, the most translated book I've ever written. The two together, $25 postage paid, which is a good savings as well. You'll find these eye-opening, and you'll want to distribute them to your friends. So call now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Oh, just a reminder, today's the last day you can download your free ebook of Hyper Grace. Don't miss the opportunity.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, David Brog, who is the executive director of Christians United for Israel, which is founded and led by Pastor John Hagee. As I said at the beginning of the show, this gives me a great opportunity to interact with someone. We are both Jews. I'm a follower of Jesus. David is not. There are specific things that Christians United for Israel would emphasize, and I might emphasize other things. And yet, when it comes to the call to stand together with Israel, to recognize God's purposes for Israel, to recognize that it is right for Christians to bless Israel and also undo some of the horrors of Christian anti-Semitism in the past while treating all people with equality and justice in the Middle East, David and I are united shoulder to shoulder, heart to heart, to stand for these things. David, the reason that I especially wanted to bring you on the air with me this week was not just because of your wonderful article, The End of Evangelical Support for Israel. You asked some very probing questions. You share some very disturbing information, and yet you give hope, and you point out to the many things that Christians United for Israel is doing around the world and in America. But I want you to hear a clip, David. This is from a poet, author, activist, Remy Kanazi, and he's giving a Palestinian perspective, and this is one we're hearing more and more and more about, all of the injustice, all of Israel's grievous actions against the Palestinians. And as I mentioned, this week is the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference in Israel, where movies like The Stones Cry Out will be shown, and where, from my perspective, those attending will get a very biased, harsh view on Israel. Just listen to these words. They'll fade out at a certain point, but you'll get what Remy is talking about.
Great.
Go ahead, number eight, Joey.
Nothing is normal about occupation. Nothing normal about apartheid, ethnic cleansing, siege, blockade, settler-only roads, bombing water wells, schools, mosques, and UN buildings. Nothing normal about putting a civilian population on a diet, paying non-indigenous foreigners to settle land that is already populated, rewriting the Nakba with each stolen childhood.
All right. Passionate details. Interact with that. We'll come back and have some more time, but take a couple of minutes and interact with that, because we,
sure.
you as a Jew, me as a Jewish follower of Jesus, we care about justice for all people.
That's right.
What about these charges?
And, you know, I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking being pro-Israel means somehow being anti-Palestinian. I don't believe that is the case. I've noticed more the opposite, frankly. I think those who are pro-Palestinian have a hatred towards Israel. And if you listen to the man who just spoke, there was a hatred there, an anger there. Palestinians have suffered in this conflict. I think one has to be a fool to deny that. But Elie Wiesel, I think, put it best. He said Palestinians have every right to be angry, but they should be angry at their parents, not at Israel. And what he meant by that was, just like you said before the break, in 1948 there could have been two states for two people, an Israel much smaller than present-day Israel, by the way, and an Arab-Palestinian state much larger than the West Bank and Gaza. The Jews said yes to the UN partition plan. Not only did they say yes, they danced in the streets for joy. And by the way, this Jewish state on offer did not include Jerusalem or its Jewish majority, neither. The Palestinians not only said no, but they said they went to war the very next morning to try to destroy the Jewish state before it could be born. So if you don't like the occupation, you don't like the absence of a Palestinian state, you might want to blame that generation. I would update Elie Wiesel, by the way.
All right, we come back. You'll update Elie Wiesel. And the big question is, refugee crisis, issues like that, whose fault is it? Why is there a refugee crisis in the Middle East?
It's the life. Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I don't want to indulge your amnesia about a glorious past. Have a therapy session on two sides with equal grievances. The only thing barren is your moral capacity. Blooming a settler colonial state with appropriated culture. I will not fight for your privilege, nor will I seek to normalize it. It's not just the occupation, stupid. It's the right of return, equality for all Palestinians. It's a transformation from a racist, exclusivist, supremacist state to a nation for all of its...
All right, again, the voice of poet, activist, author Remy Kanazi speaking out against the modern state of Israel and speaking on behalf of fellow Palestinians. My guest, David Brog, Executive Director of Christians United for Israel, serving with Pastor John Hagee, that is CUFI. And David, you know, we were chatting before the show. We might have different prophetic perspectives, or Pastor Hagee and I may see the four blood moons differently or things like that. But that's also secondary to these really life and death issues with the state of Israel. And the importance of Christians standing with Israel, I mean, I can't underscore how massively important it is, especially in light of church history, where the church was often on the wrong side of Israel and the Jewish people, and the persecutor and the hater, and without the seeds of Christian anti-Semitism that were breeding in Europe for centuries, you couldn't have had a Holocaust take place without that hostility towards the Jews that had been breeded for a long time. So these, to me, are life and death issues. I know you and Pastor Hagee feel passionately about these as well. You said that you wanted to update what Elie Wiesel said, that if Palestinians are upset, they should be upset with their situation. They should be upset with their parents because it's decisions their parents made. Why don't you update that for us?
Well, yeah. And so you said, no, more than that, they have every right to be angry. They should be angry at their parents. I would update it to say they have every right to be angry. They should be angry at their parents and their grandparents. Their parents, rather, because we're not talking ancient history here, and it's funny how quickly 1948 becomes ancient history. But Israel has offered as recently as 2000 and 2008 to give the Palestinians everything they claim they want, which is a state in the West Bank and Gaza, including East Jerusalem. And in 2008, they were offered 100%. In other words, Israel would have retained 2% of the West Bank, 3% of the West Bank, to accommodate the settlements. But in exchange for that, it would have given the Palestinians an equivalent amount of territory out of Israel proper. So we're talking in 2000 and 2008, offers for essentially all of the West Bank, all of Gaza, East Jerusalem. And in each case, they turned it down. In 2000, they turned it down violently by starting an intifada where suicide bombers killed over 1,000 Israelis, Arabs and Jews. In 2008, they turned it down just by saying no. So it just, again, if you don't like the occupation, if you don't like the settlements, do you have to necessarily point the finger of blame at Israel, or is it possible when you learn the history to say, okay, why didn't the Palestinians say yes? And in the absence of a yes from the Palestinians, why would Israel give up land that is so central to their security? When Israel withdrew every last Israeli citizen and soldier from Gaza in 2005, they didn't get peace in return. They got over 8,000 missiles and mortars fired from Gaza into southern Israel. The West Bank isn't overlooking southern Israel. It's overlooking central Israel, where over 70% of Israelis live, where Ben-Gurion Airport is. If the same thing happened in the West Bank that happened in Gaza, you'd have missiles landing in the middle of Jerusalem, Ben-Gurion Airport, and Tel Aviv every day. I think Israel has a right to say, no thank you. We want a peace deal, an end of the conflict and security arrangements before we give you that opportunity.
So you think it would be misguided for Israel to simply say, okay, we're going to trust you this time around?
Yeah, but unfortunately, Michael, you know, everyone looks today at Mahmoud Abbas, who, unlike Yasser Arafat, his predecessor, is not tied to actively funding terrorist attacks against Israelis. The supposed partner for peace, Yasser Arafat, was funding suicide bombings of Israeli cafes and restaurants, not exactly a real partner for peace. Abbas, the current Palestinian president, is not tied to directly funding terror. He seems like a better man and a good man to make peace with. But we have to look at something. When Israel gave Gaza to Abbas in 2005, Hamas, a terrorist organization recognized as such not only by Israel, but also by America and the European Union, took over from Abbas in a bloody coup very easily and very quickly, and turned Gaza into one big terrorist camp, firing over 8,000 missiles into southern Israel. I think Israel needs to know that wouldn't be repeated again. If you look at the situation today in the West Bank, the only reason why Abbas is still in power is because Israel still goes into the West Bank to fight Hamas terror. If you remove Israel from the equation, most astute observers agree Hamas would easily take over the West Bank. You'd have the same situation. The strategic highland of Judea and Samaria would become a base from which missiles are easily fired down into the heart of Tel Aviv, the heart of Jerusalem, the heart of Ben-Gurion Airport. Israelis aren't there because they like occupying, because they like conflict. They're there because the alternatives they face are not good alternatives. And Israel is doing what any other nation on earth would do, which is saying, we have an obligation to protect our citizens first and foremost, and we will only make great sacrifices for peace when we have some reason to believe they will actually achieve peace and not further endanger us.
And, you know, what we also have to look at in the larger picture here, and it's often frustrating because there is not a larger narrative that people are hearing and understanding. I've talked to Israeli soldiers that talk about the ethics training that they start with and how they can't even leave base without their ID and their ethics, their code of ethics, and the amount of effort that's made to not kill or hurt Palestinian civilians. And yet Israel being painted in these very, very harsh, broad, ugly brushstrokes. But let's talk about this other issue, the refugee issue. According to Arab Resolution 1457, which the Arab League passed in 1959, quote, the Arab countries will not grant citizenship to applicants of Palestinian origin in order to prevent their assimilation into the host countries. So many of my listeners know the story well. With the founding of the modern state of Israel in 1948, about 800,000 Jews were expelled from surrounding Arab and Muslim lands, and Israel absorbed the great majority of them. Some went to other places, but Israel absorbed the great majority of them. When it came to the Arabs that were living in the land, some fled because of the war. Some fled because they were urged to do so by the Arab leadership, telling them, we'll drive the Jews in the sea and come back to your land. In any case, about 600,000 were displaced. About 200,000 remained in the land. But there was no effort by the surrounding Arab and Muslim nations to absorb them. In fact, the opposite was done. Even a resolution was passed. To this day, you go to a country like Lebanon, and you have Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon. So am I exaggerating this picture that the refugee problem is also largely due to the surrounding Muslim Arab nations saying, we will not assimilate you?
It's absolutely due to that. You know, it's true that Israel, you know, people talk about how Israel expelled Arabs in 1948. They forget to mention one important fact, to the extent Israeli troops were involved in expelling Arabs, it was a minority. Like you said, most fled a war. Some left at the urging of their own leaders. Some were expelled by Israeli troops in 1948. They just leave out one important part. It was part of a war that Israel didn't want, a war started by the Palestinian Arabs and then continued by five surrounding Arab nations to destroy Israel. And like in any war, in a war that the Israelis didn't want, they had to make some tough choices. When an Arab village was overlooking a vital road, they had to make sure that village couldn't be used as a place for the enemy to shoot at Israeli traffic and take Israeli territory. The war is to blame for the bitter fruit of the war. It was a war started by Palestinians and Arabs. Israel dared to fight back. Israel dared to survive. I have a hard time blaming Israel for the suffering on both sides. And like in any war, there was suffering on both sides. But what made this war different, which you point out, is in most wars, when there are refugees, they're quickly resettled. Israel resettled its Jewish refugees. The Arabs were clear they wanted to use these people as political pawns. The political point of having refugees was far more important to them than the humanitarian point of resettling people, giving them citizenship, and letting them continue their lives. It reminds me of the tactics of Hamas, which will hide its missiles in civilian buildings, fire its missiles from civilian buildings, and then cry to the world when Israel, in trying to take out the missiles, will harm a civilian building.
Mm-hmm.
They're not worried about human beings. They don't see every life as being in the image of God and being infinitely precious. They're more interested in sacrificing lives for the sake of their PR. It's done with refugees since 1948. Today it's done with civilians who are unfortunately stuck in a battlefield, not of Israel's choosing, but of Hamas's choosing.
Yeah. David, we come back. I want to ask one last question, an image that's often presented to make Israel look bad, and then let's move forward. What can we do to be proactive, to reverse any negative tide, and to push in the right direction in terms of standing with Israel?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There can be no excuse for the illegal and arbitrary confiscation of furniture and household belongings.
While I was growing up, I thought it was the problem of the previous generation. After 67, I felt now it's become my issue.
They have their aims. Now it is very clear, very evident. They want all the land.
Don't come just to run where Jesus walked, but come to meet the living stones.
Right, that is from the movie The Stones Cry Out, a movie that is being watched at the Christ at the Checkpoint conference taking place in Bethlehem as I speak with my guest, David Brog, Executive Director of CUFI, Christians United for Israel, under the leadership of Pastor John Hagee, Reverend Alex Awad, one of the leaders of the conference in Bethlehem Bible College, said this uncritical support for the Israeli war machine and the settlement policies and the strong support for the war against Iraq and all the following U.S. wars based on theology is what I consider the spiritual captivity of the evangelical church. Due to their eagerness to fulfill biblical prophecy and their zeal and support for the secular state of Israel, many evangelical leaders slid off their God-given tracks. David, we've only got a few minutes, but I want to ask you three specific questions. First, just imagery. We hear about the occupation, the siege, apartheid, genocide, ethnic cleansing, horrific words like that. But then you'll see an image of a family watching as Israeli soldiers bulldoze their house. Why such extreme measures taken? You know, the security fence, the wall, that's one thing to keep the murderers out, but why bulldoze houses? I mean, what's the rationale behind that?
Well, again, and this is where good people can disagree, and good people do disagree. This is a hotly debated topic in Israel itself. The rationale is this, though, Michael, which is, how do you deter a suicide bomber? You know, it used to be getting caught was a deterrent. It used to be, possibly getting shot while you're carrying out your terrorist mission was a disincentive. Someone wants to die, it's very hard to stop the terrorist bombing. So one method is to destroy their homes. They know that if they are commit a suicide bombing and kill innocent people, they'll be forcing their families to be homeless. And the hope is that's a deterrent. Ultimately, if we have to choose between human life in human possessions, I think choosing human life is the better choice. But who's forcing the choice? Who's strapping bombs
exactly
to their bodies and wandering into cafes? It's a problem Israel would rather not have. But like so much of what they do, these Palestinians are showing Israel's responses to Palestinian violence without ever discussing the violence that necessitated the response.
Exactly. So you shot me in the leg, and I tackled you, and there's just a picture of me, a big guy, tackling you.
That's exactly right.
Right, so you don't shoot me again. All right, next question, and again, you could go on for hours with each of these, I'm sure, but just real short answer. You work with Pastor John Hagee. He teaches a lot about end-time prophecy. You work with many well-known Christian leaders around America and around the world. From your perspective, are these leaders doing what they're doing, standing with Israel, because they think this is a way to speed up biblical prophecy and kind of like actors in a movie, or are they doing it simply because they believe it's right to stand with Israel and they love the Jewish people?
because it's right to stand with Israel and they love the Jewish people. And anyone who thinks they're doing it to speed up the second coming of Jesus knows very little about Christianity and Christian theology. It's black letter Christian theology these days in a largely premillennial Christian world that you can't speed the second coming by as much as a second. Human action cannot change God's timetable. Therefore, why does someone like Pastor Hagee or someone like you get out of bed in the morning and go to a pro-Israel rally? It can't be to speed the second coming. You believe you're powerless to do so. It clearly has to come from somewhere else. People confuse beliefs and motives too easily. Yeah. It just shows an ignorance of Christianity. And frankly, Michael, I find that to be a slander of Christianity. When something done with a full heart and a lot of love is discredited like that.
Yeah, and in point of fact, I know the motivation because I ran into it when I first became a believer in Jesus, and the church just had this just gut level heart for Israel and love for the Jewish people, and it was just written on their hearts. And the last they thought things happening were very exciting, and that we were getting closer to the second coming.
And surely, some Jews who think it's the days of the Messiah.
Right, right, and surely you know we go around the world, preach the gospel. We believe it's important. You know, the Great Commission has to be fulfilled before Jesus returns. But the idea that there's this, you know, prophetic scenario. You know the people. I know the people. I just wanted to dispel that. Listen, Unfortunately, we are out of time, but take a minute. You ended your article with encouragement about what is happening. Let folks know some of what CUFI is successfully doing to educate people about Israel, especially on the college campuses.
Well, I appreciate it, Michael, and I just want to make a quick closing point as well. If you're a Christian who wants to support Israel, again, we're not a gospel-focused organization. We're an organization who says, do what you do religiously. Walk your Christian walk. But if you want to add to that walk education and action on behalf of Israel, speaking out on behalf of Israel before our leaders, and teaching the facts about Israel to our young people on campus or in the millennial evangelical world, Christians United for Israel is the organization that's leading that charge. We have over 1.6 million members. That's great, but it's nothing more than a good start. I just want to close with this thought, Michael, because I try not to get angry about this, everyone sort of focusing on Israel and blaming Israel. But we stand today, there's a great human rights tragedy playing out before our eyes today, and it is the extinction of some of the most ancient Christian communities in the world. Egypt, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and the Palestinian Authority-controlled territories in the West Bank. These Christian communities are being bombed, being shot at on their way to church, bombed while they're sitting in church. They're disappearing. This is a crisis, and in the middle of a human rights crisis like this, to see so-called Christians ignoring it, and instead taking valuable time, energy, and money to focus on some steps Israel takes to defend its citizens, Jewish, Arab, and Muslim, from Hamas and Hezbollah terrorism, to me is a terrible waste. If these people really care about Christians and Christian lives, why don't they speak out about the tragedy befalling the Christians of the Arab and Muslim world? The hypocrisy there and the wasted energy there that could be saving Christian lives, frankly, does make me angry.
Yeah, well, David, I believe in that case, it's a righteous anger, and I share it. The good news is we can do something positive about it. Hey, got to run, but thanks for joining me on the air. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate you.
All right. Friends, get educated. Find out. Tell me about Crusades. Tell me about the Inquisition. Tell me about how many Jews look at Jesus today. Do you know? Tell me the truth about Israel. Is Israel an evil occupier? Two resources, my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, together with the DVD. It's two DVDs with Q&A at the University of South Florida's Israel and Evil Occupier. $25, postage paid. You'll also help us stand on the front lines of Jewish ministry. Order from my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, or write by calling 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, if you want to be on the side of justice in the Middle East, then you need to stand with Israel. You're about to hear from a Palestinian Christian who's going to bring a very, very different perspective than we're used to hearing, and I'll speak with a young man about what it's going to take to reach the young generation here in America.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH, number to call. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. We have focused additionally on the subject of Israel, the Jewish people, the Middle East, because of the Christ at the Checkpoint conference that is taking place right now in Bethlehem. I want to repeat what I said yesterday. To the extent that Israel is guilty of inflicting or suffering on the Jewish people, to the extent on the Palestinian people, excuse me, to the extent that Israel's actions are unjust or harsh, to that degree we need to call Israel to account. To the degree that the primary suffering of the Palestinian Christians is due to the decisions that have been made by the Muslim and Arab leadership in this generation and past generations, to the extent that Israel is being wrongly portrayed, then by all means, we need to speak up for the truth in that regard. And my great concern with the Christ at the Checkpoint conference is that people will leave that conference with hostility towards Israel and the Jewish people, thinking that there is this horrific wall that Israel built to oppress the Palestinians when it was simply built a security fence with 3-4% as an actual wall. And it was built to keep murderers out and snipers from killing men, women, and children. To that extent, I am grieved over where the conference would go, to the extent that it will not recognize God's purposes for Israel. According to the scriptures, I am grieved. I want to play a couple of clips for you, and then I'm going to bring on a guest. He is a Palestinian Christian. I cannot ask every kind of detailed question because he lives in Palestinian territory, and there is radical Islam and other issues there to deal with and to recognize. But there is a call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. It's an ugly campaign. It is a harmful campaign. It is one that hurts Israel and the Jewish people. I want you to hear a couple of clips on the side of this and then against it. Clip number 11.
These are not imagined scenarios. Our tuition dollars are profiting off of death. Divestment is the next step. This is not about a nation or a people, but what's being done to people. In our names, with our currency, this university will not liberate anyone, but it can choose to cease making a buck off of misery. Vote yes for divestment. No to appeasement. Affirming injustice isn't positive for any climate.
All right, that's what Remy Kanazi has to say. I want you to hear Ben Shapiro. He is a journalist and a radio host and a UCLA grad. He was speaking at a large gathering at UCLA, and he was very upset as to what was happening.
I've never been more ashamed to be a Bruin. I've never been more ashamed to be an alumnus of this university than to see this divestment petition being considered at this level. To pretend that this is about occupation, to pretend this is about peace, to pretend this is about anything but vile and despicable Jew hatred is a lie. There's only one reason. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing Saudi Arabia. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing Iran. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing Palestine. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing the vast bevy of human rights violations that happen every day in the Middle East, exponentially worse than what happens in Israel.
Double standards, double standards, double standards. My guest, Palestinian Christian pastor, when we come back.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. I've got a very special guest about to join me. 866-34-TRUTH. I may get to some calls, but because of the special guests I've had, David Brog in the first hour and now Pastor Stephen Curry of the Holy Land Mission, I may not be able to get to calls in the next half hour. Stephen has been following Jesus since 1990. He has a great burden to reach fellow Arabs with the gospel of Jesus. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. You're in the States right now?
Yes, sir. Dr. Brown, thank you for having me on this show. I really appreciate it.
Please tell me about your own upbringing, where you grew up, and what your background was religiously and ethnically.
Sure. I'm a born-again Israeli, Palestinian, Arab, born in Jerusalem. That's a big mouthful because there's a lot that comes with it. My father was born into a Greek Orthodox family in Jerusalem. He moved to Bethlehem, started the church there. At age 10, I gave my life to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I grew up under the father, my father, who believed in both the infallible Word of God of the Old and the New Testament. It's not one without the other, one or either. It's both the Old and the New. And the God that we serve is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In the past 10 years, we've been known to be the persecuted ministry because of much of the suffering and discrimination and persecution and martyrdom that our ministry have experienced with taking the stand of being an evangelistic ministry, not ashamed of the gospel, but also a ministry that believes in God's promises, believes in the love and acceptance of the Jewish people, and believes that God has a plan for the Jewish people, which he planned out in the Old and the New Testament.
All right. So would you say that your viewpoint, recognizing God's plan for the Jewish people, is a minority one among Palestinian Christians?
To say minority is actually understatement. My father and I are the only two evangelical Arab pastors in the Palestinian territories that do not promote this replacement theology. We do not promote this teaching of God is done with the Jewish people. We believe that God has a plan for them, and by loving them, we are fulfilling Romans 9, 10, 11, by reaching out to them. If Jewish people see that Arabs love them because of a Jewish Messiah named Jesus Christ, and just loves them because we're just taught to love them with no hidden agendas, then that could be the strongest light it can possibly be.
All right, Stephen, it's wonderful to hear you share these things. We're really hoping to meet with you a few months from now during our tour of Israel. And I know that you speak freely and passionately, but you also use great wisdom because there are many that would not like what you're doing or what your father's doing. When you speak about persecution, opposition, what do you feel free to share with us? What can you tell us?
Sure, brother. The sentiment that's going on right now that there is no persecution in the Palestinian territories within the Holy Land, and that is a slap in the face of many of the Christians that have left the land because of the violence, because of the growth of what's going on there. Here's what I can share, Dr. Brown, is that there is no persecution in the Arab community as long as you're not outstanding or outspoken about what you believe. Just a few weeks, just about 4 months ago, a young Muslim man, we came to our church to learn the Bible. After 3.5 months of discipling him, his mom talked to him about his change in faith, or she noticed something different about him. He woke up in the morning after confessing his mom that he's now sitting down with a believer. His mom got so worried and concerned that he's been brainwashed. He actually brought his father and his uncle, and they actually beat him. He ran away and came back 2 days home, and they called the Palestinian Authority on him. His charge is religious blasphemy and religious attack. That's his police charge, which I have in my hand. All simply for wanting to ask questions to his parents about Jesus Christ, and simply about asking questions about who Jesus Christ is in the Quran. And this is a young man that I've dealt with. He sat in jail for 7 days. I went to visit him in jail, and I looked at him in his face, and he says something. He says, "I have done nothing wrong. He kept telling me, "I've done nothing wrong." This is a young man that has no current records. His charge was simply religious blasphemy and religious attack.
And where? Tell us where again this is taking place. What city in Israel?
In Bethlehem.
Okay, so this is not in Gaza under Hamas. This is Bethlehem. But at the same time, Stephen, there is a conference taking place. I say at the same time right now, Christ at the Checkpoint. And at the beginning of the conference, Bishra Awad, former president of Bethlehem Bible College, said, "As evangelicals, we pledge our allegiance to Palestinian President Abbas and the prime minister." It seems that they're having this open Christian conference with the blessing of the Palestinian Authority. And yet you're saying that if you're outspoken about your faith, it can be trouble. We're getting two different pictures in the West here. Can you help us sort that out?
Yeah, sure, Dr. Brown. There's only so much, again, as you understand, there's only so much I can share because I live in two streets down the block from these kind of folks. Here's the thing.
And you'd like to keep living for a while, as long as the Lord...
Exactly. At least, right. Fear of dying is not something on my agenda. I've been beaten and we've been shot at and you name it, but that's a long... We'll probably need another program for that, but... it's just that we want to be able to do as much as we can before we go. So let me quickly give you two or three points, if I may. One, the main underlying problem is this. These are folks that are guiding the Bible with their emotions rather than the Bible guiding their emotions.
Please say that again.
These are folks that are guiding the Bible with their emotions rather than the Bible guiding their emotions. The minute you start to transform and to push the Bible into your own track because of an emotional thing that you've had growing up, or because of an emotional thing that your parents or great-grandparents have had growing up, then that, I believe, is sort of the next step down from the formidable sin of the abomination of cursing the Holy Spirit. I think that just goes right along there, because then that's where apostasy starts to happen. That's where a wrong Bible teaching happened, and this is what's going on here on the ground. Number two, these are Palestinian evangelical Christians that are, I believe, are signing their own death release, because the Palestinian Authority does not recognize the evangelical church movement. They delegitimize the evangelical church. They refuse to accept the evangelical church as a legitimate church. Why is the PA asking the world to recognize them, but yet they are not accepting to recognize the evangelical church movement? I wrote an article and I did a big press release on Fox News and other sources last year. And the way they responded to these things, without directly mentioning my name in their writing or in their articles, is that, well, the PA is building its own infrastructure. And so basically, they're actually standing up and defending the PA, justifying the PA, PA's discrimination and PA singling out an evangelical church. The third point, where were all these people before the wall went up? Where were all these folks when... there was suicide bombings and there was killing and bloodshed? That is my question. The fourth point, my friend David Brog, who is a good friend of mine, I've had the privilege to sit down to him face to face, and he said something to me that stood out to me. He said, "Pastor Curry, the existence of the Arab Palestinian Christians in the Holy Land is important for me." He said, "It's important for me, but we need to find evangelical Christians that we can trust, evangelical Christians that are going on the Bible." So I love David Brog. He's a good friend of mine, and he's actually a brother to me. And he wrote an article, a very passionate article. And actually, I could just see his cry in his article. He's Actually, it's a desperateness. And I just want to challenge David Brog. I want to encourage David Brog. I want to encourage you and others who are sensing the fear of this crisis at the checkpoint. I just got a call 20 minutes ago from one of my friends who is attending there every day to sort of see and sense what's going on. And he's sensing much desperateness on their end. So I want to challenge everybody that's listening who is concerned about Israel, who is rightfully concerned about what's going on there, to not be afraid. Just like they have concerns, just like they are nervous, we have not lost the battle. And the battle is that we must love each other, but we must be honest, and transparency and integrity is essential in this situation.
Yeah, truth. We can do nothing against the truth, but only for the truth. Pastor Stephen, please stay right there. I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask you. I appreciate your courage. I commend you for your heart to honor the Lord at any cost.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. My special guest, Palestinian Christian leader, Pastor Stephen Corey of the Holy Land Mission. He's currently working on a multipurpose worship center in Jerusalem. Pastor Stephen, we've often heard that Christian population in Bethlehem is declining, and it's the fault of Israel. The two big issues I have with that, number one, there's the assault on Christianity throughout the Muslim world and the Middle East in countries like Egypt and Syria and Iraq, and then on a larger scale in northern Nigeria and other places like that. So we see the effect of radical Islam on Christianity, the persecution worldwide. I don't know how you can separate Bethlehem from that larger picture. And then specifically, my understanding was that there was a lot more freedom until the Palestinian Authority took over Bethlehem, was it in the mid-90s? But you're a native there. You're a citizen there. Tell me your perspective.
Sure, brother. When I'm asked this question by many folks, we have to be careful how to respond to people that truly have suffered. Here's the reality. Like I said, I was born in Jerusalem, and I grew up all my life in Bethlehem, minus the years I went to the college in the U.S. Other than that, I'm there all my life. Here's what we have to be careful at. There are people that have suffered because of the closure of the wall in Bethlehem. Is this a realistic thing? Yes. Have people suffered from lack of jobs? Have people suffered from lack of transportation? And then people feel like they're in a big prison? Yes. And many of these people that feel that way are the same people that never had anything to do with political fighting and so forth. Now, here's where we have to be careful. Did Israel put up the wall to suffer the Christians? Did Israel put up the wall to intentionally suffer the Palestinian Muslims? I don't believe that, because I go back to the 80s and 90s, where there were still freedom fighting. That's what they call themselves, freedom fighters, where they throw rocks at Israeli soldiers, and they light up the tires in the middle of the streets. And I was one of those kids that did the same thing. We lit up tires and threw rocks. Even when that was going on, we were quote-unquote resistance to the quote-unquote occupation. There was never a checkpoint. As a little kid, we'd throw rocks from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And at one, Jewish people would be having hummus and shawarma and falafels and buying vegetables from that same street that we were throwing rocks from. It's just that it took a turn, and the turn that the second intifada took forced the arm and forced the wrist of those that were in the land who had the power, which is the state of Israel, had the power, who had the resources, who had the governing power to take, we twisted the arms of those that are above us. And for saying such statements as I'm saying right now, I could get killed for it within 24 hours. But, the reality is I'm speaking to you the voice of thousands and thousands of thousands of what people really know and feel in their heart. Just nobody's willing to speak their heart because of fear of retaliation, what would happen to them. But that is the two points that I would answer you, is that, and I will summarize it one more time, is one, we cannot dismiss that there is suffering. We cannot dismiss that there are people hurting and are paying a price because of the wall that was placed there by the Israeli government. We cannot dismiss that suffering. I have members in my church that can't get jobs anymore, and so forth. And that has created a prison within a prison, meaning Palestinian Christians that are stuck between a rock and a hard place. They can't speak out against the Palestinian Authority because now they're behind the wall. There's nowhere to run. And they can't speak up against Israelis because if they do, then their name will be put on this computer that will be blacklisted. So what do? Even though down deep in their hearts, they know and they believe 100% they are much better off under the Israeli government's ruling, without a doubt. Even those that are fighting fanatically will admit to that. It's just that none of them are willing to look in the mirror and ask themselves the right questions. This is not my philosophy only. I'm just reverberating what's going on in the minds and the hearts of the people in the streets in Bethlehem, Ramallah, and so forth. Many are fighting for a cause of Palestinian authority. Many of them are fighting for the cause of freedom. Let's fight for the cause of freedom. Let's fight for the cause of freedom. That's what they're fighting for, the cause of freedom. But the thing is, that same freedom, I believe, is that same thing that will bring an end to our existence.
Yeah, and again, the security fence and wall were put up to keep murderers out. Pastor Stephen, two more quick questions, then we're out of time. One, the Israeli Arabs, if they were given the choice of being under Hamas or Palestinian Authority or living under the Israeli government, what choice would they make?
The majority will tell you, leave us alone, we want to be under Israel. That's not my opinion, again. That's what I'm hearing from the streets. That's what I'm hearing from people. That's what I'm hearing people tell me in my face. Leave us alone. Don't suck us into this situation. We want to be left alone. Some of them want to help the Palestinian cause, but yet they themselves don't want to be under the Palestinian cause, which is kind of ironic and contradicting
right.
in a way. And there's
right.
a lot. I think what's important for the viewers who are listening right now to understand And I'm telling you, people like David Brog, who is looked at as an anti-Arab Zionistic person, I think people like David Brog are the people that are going to build the peace, because these are men that love the Arab people. These are men that know, David Brog and others know, that there are Arabs that want peace. There are Arabs that want hope. And there's a lot of good. And this is, again, I need to make sure to understand this, because those that are passionate, Dr. Brown, about Israel and the Palestinian situation are sometimes blinded. They're either blinded against Israel or blinded against the Arab community. And we have to be careful, because that's how we are easily being dismissed nowadays. And what I want to share with being careful at is there are many good, nice, kind, peaceful Muslims and peaceful Christian Palestinians in the land. Now, how much of a Muslim are they in the Islamic eye? That's another whole show. You know, and how much of a Christian are they in the eyes of the Bible? That's another program as well. But as a human being, there are many good people in there. But the problem is they will never speak out because nobody's empowered them to do so.
Yes. Stephen, I greatly appreciate you being with us. We've got to have you back where we can get a whole hour together. But thank you for your time, for your courage. Just got 30 seconds. If folks want to follow what you're doing, pray for you, connect with you, help financially, is there a website or anywhere they can go?
We are a 501c3 in the U.S. It's holylandmissions.org. Holylandmissions.org.
All right. Dear brother, hope to see you in Israel. May God's strength be yours and your families, and may the Lord use you to bring many of your people to the knowledge of Jesus. Thank you once again for joining us.
Amen. Glory to God. Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
All right. If he lives, he lives. If he dies, he dies. That's a follower of Jesus, friends. It's really essential that you understand the larger narrative, the history. So my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, together with the DVD lecture, plus Q&A from University of South Florida's Israel and Evil Occupier. There'll be life-changing materials for you. And this week, just $25 postage paid, which will save you about $15 off the normal price as well. But call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978, or go to AskDrBrown.org right on the homepage. My bottom line today is coming in a half hour. First, we're going to talk about the youth.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You know, yeah, Joey, I don't think I've done that, have I? I was ready to give the bottom line halfway through the program. Maybe I'll give like half bottom lines or halfway home lines. I kind of do that in certain ways. Anyway, listen, we've had an amazing hour and a half of radio interviews. I'm assuming that some of you are just tuning in and others have only caught part. Some have been listening the whole time. I strongly encourage you to go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And later today, just click on latest audio. We'll probably put this up on YouTube as well. Really, really important stuff about Israel, about the Jewish people. I know it's not thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but we've been focused on this because of the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference taking place in Bethlehem right now. And the guest I just had on, a pastor, Christian pastor, who has lived in Bethlehem and served there for many, many years. We are switching gears, but partially. I'm sitting here in the studio with Landon Schott. He's grown up in the faith, been involved in all kinds of different ministry, just a young man, about 30 years old himself. But in 2008, with his wife Heather, they founded the Rev Ministries, and now the great focus of their work, Rev TV, which is designed to be a revolutionary TV station online reaching young people with the gospel. Landon, before we talk about Rev TV, and then more specifically, before we talk about reaching the younger generation and where their values are and what to think about God and how we can bring them up to God's standard without being pulled down to theirs, you yourself have been to Israel, and it had a great impact on you. So tell me about that. When did you go, and what happened to you?
I had the privilege and honor to go last November, and I went with my wife and I, and we took our first tour. We did 14 people came along with our ministry, and I'm going to be honest with you. I know I'm supposed to say it's my wedding day or the day my child was born, but it was the greatest week of my life. It truly, truly was. I said a lot of people put it on their bucket list, and I've heard so many, you know, from pastors to elders, deacons, you know, I've grown up in the church, intercessors say, you know, one day I want to go, and we leave it for one day. But if you can go to Israel at the beginning of your life or as soon as possible, it will change the course of your entire life.
How?
Oh, I can't explain it. I've been asked so many times, what was your favorite moment? And obviously to put your feet in places where Jesus' feet were, is incredible. And to, you know, be on a boat on the Sea of Galilee and look at the shore where he called the disciples and where he walked on water. And I spent a morning in prayer, watched the sunrise come up over the Sea of Galilee, and it was so windy, and it was like a storm out there, and I could just imagine what it was like as he was out there. So that was a great morning. But more than anything, I spent 7 days doing nothing but pursuing Jesus. And if you were in a log cabin somewhere and, you know, the mountains, that would be great. But to be in the Holy Land, and, you know, we joke and people say God lives in Texas and things like that. Truly, God lives in Israel. There is something about it. And the only way I could describe it is home. It felt like home.
But you feel it's important for young ministers, young pastors to go as well. Just take 30 seconds. Did it give you any deeper sense of connection with Israel, Jewish people, future as well as past?
Absolutely. I can't wait to go back. And what it does is it makes the Bible 3D. And you know, when I'm describing or reading the Word of God, I'm thinking, you know, North Carolina to Phoenix where I live and those kind of distances. But when you're there, it's a small radius. You know, I believe they say the size of the country is the size of New Jersey approximately. And so everything is so close. You could stand in locations and see so much biblical history. It's amazing.
All right, we come back. I want to talk about where young people are missing it on Israel today, where they're only getting part of the narrative and understanding. And then talk about some of the massive issues, moral issues, spiritual issues, authority issues with the young generation, and what can be done to influence them for the gospel. Right back with my guest, Landon Schott.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, Landon Schott, he is the founder with his wife, Heather, of Rev TV. You can find it on online at revtv.com. Landon is 30 years old. What's interesting is many of the things that burden me burden him, and that he sees the problem with just kind of watering down the gospel. So you have what I call pablum from the pit, to somehow just meet people where they are, but you keep them there. In fact, Landon, is when you saw me on Piers Morgan that you kind of discovered who we are and what we're doing. Just tell our listeners first, before we get back to Israel and then the larger issue of the young people, what makes your heart beat? Why RevTV.com? What burns in you day and night?
You know, I've been dreaming about this since I was 18 years old, and the Lord put it in my heart, a national secular youth ministry reaching young people through Christ-centered media. And, you know, we have some amazing Christian networks that are broadcasting the gospel around the world. But if we're really honest with ourselves, the focus is not young people. But as you've just talked with all your past guests, the world's focus is young people. The gay agenda's focus is young people. Mm. And they have done a marvelous job reaching the young people. And one thing that the church has to look at is reaching the young people is an investment, and there's not an immediate return on your dollar. You know, it's not something where you're going to go and truly, truly profit financially off of. I mean, we have to truly invest. But McDonald's sees the investment. Nike sees the investment. All these other major companies knows that if we invest into young people, that eventually we're going to reap a return. And it's the same way in the gospel. And so I've been dreaming about this. And obviously, you know, and from radio and media, you know, media is the most powerful force in the world. It truly, truly is. It makes the Great Commission happen with going out in one blast. How many people are listening to this and watch your YouTubes from around the world? And I just saw your Facebook. 2 million people are commenting on your Facebook this week. I mean, that's insane that that's happening right now. So media is powerful. And what the Lord put in my heart was this. It was in Genesis 32. Jacob took the poplar branches and he made it spotted and speckled, and he put it in front of the sheep, and they gave birth to spotted and speckled sheep. And what the Lord put in my heart was, whatever you put in front of this generation, they're going to give birth to. And so MTV is putting, you know, teen pregnancy, teen mom, Kardashians, all these different things. And we're putting immorality. We're putting perversion. We're putting drunkenness. We're putting homosexuality in front of them. We're promoting it. And that's what this generation is giving birth to. So Rev TV is putting the gospel through reality shows, game shows, sitcoms, mockumentaries, church services, crusades, power of God, life of God, biblical studies from all different backgrounds, all different denominations, but Christ-centered media, putting in front of this generation so that they can give birth to the righteousness of God and a love for the things of God and a love for Jesus Christ.
Yeah, awesome vision. And of course, my heart is burned for Jesus Revolution for many years now. And I'm constantly ministering to the younger generation. When I look in the mirror, I'm surprised to see my gray hair, but I'm constantly focused on this. And obviously, my heart is beating for all generations and a wide range of peoples. But I recognize the young people in the crucible today. And as much as we can blame and, you know, the selfishness and the narcissism and it's all about me generation, they have been raised by parents. They have been raised by my generation that has fed right into this and played right into it. And they are inheriting the compromised faith of their fathers and mothers in many cases. When we speak about Israel, to use this as a case in point, more and more young people, especially on college campuses, are buying into an anti-Israel narrative and even talking about BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions against Israel, pulling money out of Israel. Israel is the evil occupier. And what I said to a guest in the first hour, David Brog, it seems to me as if young people gravitate towards the victim, but they don't do it based on the larger narrative of truth. So a gay kid's beat up at school. He's a really nice kid. Why are you being mean to him? Therefore, he should have the right to marry who he wants. We should redefine marriage. So it kind of goes from that. A Palestinian's been mistreated by an Israeli. Well, the Israelis are the bad ones, and they should just give the Palestinians whatever they want. So is that an exaggerated description of this generation that it's very much siding with the underdog, the victim, the apparently bullied, but not processing it through the larger grid of truth.
Absolutely, and especially through the mainstream secular media. You know, they only believe what they're being told, and what they're being told is a one-sided argument. Something that I learned while I was in Israel, and I do want to say Israel's a safe place, and that was the number one thing people asked me.
Oh,
was
yeah.
it safe?
Absolutely.
Was it safe?
Absolutely.
And I felt more safe in Israel than I did in New York City before I flew out to Israel. So we're there, and one of the tour guides that we're talking to mentioned that we have the oldest documentations in Earth's history from the Jewish people and from ancient Chinese documents. And he just referenced that, and my numbers could be off, but I believe it was approximately, 20 million, something around there, Jews that are in population right now.
Do you have 13, 14 million. Probably.
Okay, 13, 14 million.
Yeah.
And then we have, Amit, hundreds of millions, I don't know the exact number, but hundreds of millions of Chinese.
Yeah, well over a billion. Yeah, you could say that the Chinese peoples, the Indian peoples, and the Jewish people are equally ancient, and yet you have well over a billion Chinese, well over a billion Indians, and 13, 14 million Jews.
So just that math alone tells us that they're the same problem that this generation, my generation's facing, has been facing for, I admit, since the beginning of time, because that's the persecution we've seen against God's people.
Got it. All right. What about this younger generation? I am holding stats in my hand. March 7th. 2014 from Pew Research, Social and Demographic Trends, Millennials in Adulthood. They're less interested in marriage in general, getting married older. They have a lower percentage that believe in God. What's the problem?
I've seen in my lifetime, you know, we were talking earlier and about just the degeneration of society, and from the divorce rates going up to systematically taking God out of society. And the Bible says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of a wisdom, and we've removed the fear of God or the acknowledgement. You know, I lived in California for a short period of time, and when I was there in the early 2000s, they spent $90 million taking the cross out of the seal in just the state logos. Mm. And now they're in bankruptcy and can't pay their state employees but to invest that just to remove a cross. You know, I look at the Democratic National Convention where they purposely took in God we trust out of the set design and different things like that, and just systematically taking God, removing the fear of the Lord, because if we don't have to acknowledge him, we don't have to acknowledge his word. And it's been systematic through the decades and this last few years completely, and now we're seeing the effect of that.
What are young people hungering for, thirsting for down deep? Are they living with a sense of purpose? Is it all a matter of hyper-narcissism?
You know, it's interesting because you've seen this justice movement rise up, and a lot of people love justice, from, you know, feeding the homeless to, you know, providing shoes. You see Tom's Shoes and then other companies get on and try to do the same with glasses and fresh water and great justice causes. But I love the scripture that says, blessed are those that hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled, or they will be satisfied. And the truth is, without Jesus in your life, you'll never be satisfied. And if you make billions of dollars, or you feed people, you do great works, but there will be always something missing in your soul. And I believe that this generation is still looking for that thing that they're missing, because they're getting everything that the world has to offer, and they are still broken, and they're still empty. And that's where we come in with the gospel, and that's where we're seeing a great response.
All right, folks, RevTV.com, especially if you've got young people. Landon, we've just got a minute before the next break, and I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask you. But what's your target age range? Obviously, anyone could watch and be interested or not interested, depending on their interests. What's your target range? Who are you shooting for? What age group?
We're really doing from teenagers to mid-20s is our private. It's that MTV audience. That's our main demographic.
Isn't MTV even younger than that?
Their prime audience is 14 to 19 right now, but they actually aim to even 30.
Got it. All right. And are you hearing any good reports from viewers?
Oh, we're seeing people from all over the world. It's really cool. And we do a conference and we're watching people in Iran tune in and watch a live conference and a move of God that's happening somewhere across the earth. So absolutely. And more than anything, it's a place for those that love media, have a heart to take that mountain. And RevTV is a platform where they can promote and they can promote Jesus from their platforms.
We come back. I want to talk about some do's and don'ts. By the way, fly out of the country. I'm going to be giving you more updates. One of the most important ministry trips of my life. I just can't disclose more now, but trust me, it's big. I'll share more with you about that later in the week. And then we'll be down in Pensacola, Florida, for the memorial service for my dear friend, Steve Hill. And just as a code word for a dear colleague who just wrote to me, the code word is hypoallergenic. There you go, buddy. Got to buy me a free dinner. I know just where we're going, too.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm sitting here with Landon Shawn, a young man I've just had the pleasure of getting to know. He's got a burning heart to see this generation touched. Landon, obviously, it's going to be more conducive for a young person, say, to hear worship with contemporary instruments than perhaps relate to a Gregorian chant, just culturally. Just like I'm used to certain food, you take me to another country, I'm not used to that food. When do we go too far with our trying to adapt the gospel message to a certain culture or generation? When, in your mind, do we go too far, especially with the young people?
We go too far anytime we step away from God's word. Anytime that we're adding to it, anytime that we're taking away from it, you know, I believe God's word is literal, and I'm amazed how many young people and young ministers don't. You know, and I always say it's funny. I'm like, hold on, as Christians, we believe, let me get this straight. We believe that, Jesus, God impregnated a young girl with his spirit, with Jesus, that he was a sinless man who died, was dead for 3 days and raised again for our sins and then ascended to heaven. In general, that's what we believe, right? And then you're telling me the rest of the Bible's allegorical. Uh-huh. You know, it's humorous. And so when we stray away from God's word, Jesus loved his word. You know, the disciples meditated on his word. Moses taught his word. And when we get away from the word of God, that's when we're going to lose our foundation in everything. And so I think that's the main thing.
And what about moral standards?
It's exact same thing. You know, we go by our feelings. You know, we go by, I knew someone and this person's a great person. And so we're married in God's eyes. And no, you're not married in God's eyes. This is what God's word says, you know. And so it's one of those just slow compromises, of our relationship with God in our dedication to reading God's words, that slow compromise just leads us further and further and further away from our relationship with the Lord.
Obviously, if someone is a youth pastor in their church or a young adult pastor, they want to throw out as wide a net as possible to reach people. Many people have been turned away from the church because of politicizing of spiritual issues. Many people have been turned away by scandals or Christian TV or whatever it is,
sure,
or just wrong understandings of, quote, traditional religion. You want to throw out the widest net to reach the most people. Jesus went to the worst of sinners and spent time with them, not to encourage them to sin more, but to transform them by his presence. Can you give me some practical do's and don'ts? You've done youth ministry on pastoral levels and things like that. You're involved in intergenerational ministry all the time. Give me some do's and don'ts for youth leaders, youth pastors, young adult ministers that are listening.
Is a great thing. I would say that the main thing that you need to do is give them your time and your heart. And if you fully invest yourself, I don't care who you are, what age you are, you know, if you're the coolest person in the room or you're out of touch with, you know, style and reality and those kind of things, you know, latest trends. If you give yourself to this generation, if you love them and this generation, they know what's real. And, you know, I see a lot of older pastors and leaders that are trying to come down and relate. And this generation doesn't need that. We don't need you to come down and relate. We need
I don't need to dye my hair and slick it back.
No, you don't need to wear, you know, Ed Hardy t-shirts and skinny jeans that you'll never fit into.
Skinny jeans wouldn't work. Skinny jeans would definitely not work.
You know, they're truly, truly looking for fathers. They're truly, truly looking for mothers that will speak into them and love them. And that's how you capture this generation, as you give them your heart.
Is it as fatherless a generation, spiritually speaking, as we often portray it to be?
Absolutely. And it truly, truly, unfortunately is. And even my peers and other ministers and pastors that I know that love God and have pastors, but their pastors aren't fathers. Mm. And it's truly a desire for all young men is to have a father, to have someone that will stand with them and speak into them and rebuke them and love and correct them and defend them. And it's truly, truly a heart's desire. And the difference, I mean, we know all the statistics, but the difference of those with fathers and those without, and it's the same thing spiritually.
I read an article a couple of years back by a friend of mine, a Jewish rabbi, who does a lot of family counseling and things like that and writes on sexual issues. And we've had many debates about Jesus, Rabbi Shmuley. But he said that he was running into couples, married couples in their 20s and 30s, who had no interest in sex. They were totally promiscuous in their teen years, high school, college, and kind of got burnt out sexually. So it's like anything else of the flesh, just like you can enjoy, I love chocolate. You don't eat so much, and then it ends up hurting you. Are you seeing young people who even some of their senses are deadened because of sensuality in the flesh? There's so much available right now as young people, and as they grow up, there's it messes their systems up?
Absolutely, especially with how easy it is to access. I mean, you don't even have to get off your Instagram account or your Twitter account to see full pornography. I mean, it's truly at the end of your fingertips. So now self-control and discipline and truly following after Jesus, denying your flesh, is so much more real because it's way easier to gain access to everything. You know, I'll have young men reach out to me in our ministry, and you know, we take a firm stand on purity and in relationship between heterosexual relationships and homosexual relationships. And I had a young man from Ireland reach out
meaning that there must be purity among heterosexuals and homosexuals must abstain.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. You know, I can't tell two teenagers, boy and girl, hey, you guys can't be, you know, sleeping together outside marriage and then not say anything over here with boys and girls with girls. It's the same. Holiness is across the board.
Right.
And he reached out to me and he just said, hey, I'm struggling with same-sex attractions and I'm struggling with these areas in sin. And he says, you know, I said, well, what's going on? And basically on through social networks on Instagrams, they would text each other and then go and meet and perform all kinds of evil acts. And it's right there on their phone. And it's the same with any sin. It's the same with anything you're struggling with. It's denying your flesh, making a choice that I chose Jesus, and I'm going to follow Jesus with everything in me.
And you're finding that he is more than enough.
He's more than enough.
All right, 30 seconds. Your book about Jezebel.
Yeah, Jezebel, the Witch's Back. It's a spiritual warfare book, and I believe that this is one of the most demonic, greatest strongholds in the church of control, manipulation, intimidation, and domination all through witchcraft.
All right, tell us the name again.
It's Jezebel, the Witch's Back.
All right, and if folks want to connect with you, what's the best way to do it?
Our ministry website's therev.com, and the network is revtv.com. So therev.com and revtv.com.
All right, got that. Therev.com, not as in the Reverend, but the Revolution.
Correct.
And revtv.com. Tell your young people about it, and they'll be able to go there 24/7 and be blessed and edified and even have some enjoyable programming. Hey, great chatting with you, Landon. Thanks for
joining
us. Friends, I am so burdened to get the truth about Israel and the Jewish people out to every one of you listening. Get this special resource package we've put together, a passionate, eye-opening teaching. I did a lecture at University of South Florida, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? My book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, which many have found to be the most eye-opening book they've ever read. Just $25 for both together, postage paid, two DVDs in the lecture with Q&A. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, askdrbrown.org. my bottom line today, the same gospel that saves the old generation is the same gospel that saves the young.